Exactly. We're still in the Dovecote, like we said. Very quick review of we talked about in Maseches Kino. Up until now, we had Perek 1 last week, where we laid down the ground rules, and then the last few Mishnayos of Perek Beis of the second chapter that we did were about flying from this one into this one, and this one into this one, and this one into this one. We had the whole cascading effect of them flying back and forth, with 7 coming out being the clear winner. We addressed a number of issues there. Until now, primarily, we have been talking about what we call a kan or kain stuma. Right? A kain stuma, as we said, is where they did not designate which bird was going to be the chatas and which bird was going to be the ola. Now in Mishnah Dalet, which is where we're up to, chapter 2, Mishnah 4, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, we have a case where the Mishnah discusses that. So you add the following. Kan stuma v'kan mefureshes. Parach min hastuma l'mefureshes. If you had one kan, one pair, that had already been set aside in addition and next to, separate from, a pair that had not yet been designated which one was an ola and which one was a chatas. Okay? So one pair where you know X is the ola and X is the chat and Y is the chatas, and the other pair, you can still decide which one is going to be the ola and the chatas. So parach min hastuma la mefureshes. If from the one which was not designated, it flew into the mefureshes, what do? Yikach zug lasheni. You can just take another pair and put it in the stuma, and then bring one and one from the mefureshes. Presumably, hopefully, you know.
That raises a problem, though.
What?
That raises a problem. Because you have the other two on the side.
The three all have to get killed. My apologies.
The three all have to get killed.
Yeah, yeah. No. There you don't know which one's a chatas and which one's an ola. So yikach zug lasheni. Sorry, you just the at least the kan stuma is saved. So the one that flew to the side, you got to wait for it to die. The two that got mixed up.
Can't tell which one it
correct.
Is
you got to wait for them to die, and the one that remains, you can bring it a partner and still bring it. Okay, so you've lost three in this game, but you've still left with one.
But if two of them have been designated already, then there must be some way to distinguish them one from the
correct. That was my original assumption. It appears that when this flew in, you lost track. That's the case of the Mishnah.
Okay.
When you lost track.
Well,
if you could designate
anyways,
them...
Right?
Correct. 100%.
Did they put little wires around the legs so they know which one? They didn't do that then.
We do see them doing similar things.
Yeah, right, later
like,
on.
Like on baby's legs, for example.
Yeah.
Like parrots.
To identify them to the parrot.
Yeah.
mistakes in the hospital.
Right, and we do that also with Bikurim fruit, so they definitely had that idea. It's just where it didn't happen, or you forgot, even worse. Which, did I tie the red string on the chatas or the ola?
Yeah.
Anyways, but yes, ultimately you're correct. So long as they get mixed up and they're designated, they have to die. So that's what happened here. Okay. Chazar, let's say now one flew back. Oshe parach min hamefureshes rishon, hare kulam yumusu. But if the one from the set aside, which you don't know whether it was a chatas or ola, flew into the kan stuma, then everything is toast anyways, so you're done. Okay. That was a fairly straightforward Mishnah. Now we get a slightly more entertaining case. So you've got now three piles. Your chatas pile, which has one chatas, your ola pile on the other side, which has one ola, and in the middle you have a stuma, an undesignated pair, which one's chatas, which one's ola. Okay, so chatas mikan, ve'ola mikan, ustuma be'emza. Okay, so we've got again our three piles, chatas, pair, ola. What's going to happen? Parach min ha'emza latzdadin, echad helach ve'echad helach. He says, let's say the two in the middle, one flew off to this side and one flew off to that side. So now we've got two in our chatas pile and two in our ola pile. What's the halacha there? Says the Mishnah, greatest scenario. Lo hifsid klum, you don't lose out. Why? Ela yomar, this is what you should say. Ze shalach etzel chataot, the plain undesignated bird that flew from the middle to the chatas pile, we're going to say that one's a chatas. Ve'ze shalach etzel olot, and the one that flew here to the ola pile, great, that's an ola. Now you can bring two chatases from this side and two olas from this side, and everybody is happy.
Okay. Aren't we assuming that it's really designating both as a unit as opposed to designating them individually? In other words, if he sees the two chicks and he says, this one, pointing to this one, is the ola, and this one is the chatat, that problem, this problem can't be resolved.
Correct, because you don't know what you're pointing to.
Exactly.
It just correct. Yeah. So an excellent point that you're simply saying this one which flew from the middle to there. Yeah. At the end of the day, when they're in their final destination, you don't know if what you would be pointing at would be the original khatas or your
right.
new khatas. That's yeah,
they
it's
they
a fair point.
They just know they're designated,
yeah.
but they don't know
yeah.
which
Yeah, I mean, they say zeb, yeah. But I think you're right. I don't think they were pointing.
Why did you have to make it the same as the one they already had? Why didn't you just...
I think one is enough. I think one is sufficient.
Because now they're going to have two the same, right?
Yes.
Why didn't you just say, okay, we have a chata, let's make a nola. We got enough now. We have two. We have a pair.
Meaning, again, we've got two that are mixed up. We don't know which one was from the Khan Stuma and which one was the original Khatat.
Right.
As soon as it flies into that pile, I think just really if you designated one, that would be good enough. Maybe because we'd assume that the other of the pair would be automatically designated, but I don't see that. I'm not clear what you're asking. I think I misunderstood your question.
If the middle has ones that have been two that have been undesignated, mm-hmm. and then the left and right have this
designated.
One designated, Khata, this mm-hmm. one, okay? If one of them flies there, mm-hmm. then why don't you just make it the other one, say, I'm done now, I got a pair. Why do you have to say...
Because there's three there.
No, because we don't know which was the bird that originally came from the middle and which was the one that was originally there, right? In all these cases with birds... were unable to identify which was
okay.
which.
No,
so the simpler resolution
okay.
is to say, that way we know these are both chataot.
Okay, no, that, I understand. Okay.
Yeah, that's... yeah. Okay. Chazar la'emtza. Now you had one of those fly into the middle from each. And again, they're mixed up together, you don't know which is which. Now you've got a for sure chatas and a for sure ola in the middle, so what do you do? Hayamtzayim yamutu, the middle ones, you got to let them die. Elu yikrvu chataot, ve'elu yikrvu olot. And the individuals that are left, and again, if this would happen with 20 birds, that's why the Mishnah is using a plural language, but bottom line is there's one in the chatas pile that you can still bring as a chatas, and there's one in the ola pile that you can still bring as an ola. Okay, so the ones in the middle, the ones that flew back to the middle after they flew out to the sides. So again, we started with two in the middle, one and one, chatas ola, flew out, two chatases, two olas, flew back in, two you got to let die, one chatas, one ola you can bring. Okay, that's the halacha the Mishnah is telling us at this point. Chazar, oshe parach min ha'emtza letzadin. If now, again, from the middle it flies back, then obviously, harei kulan yamusu, everyone has got to live out their lives mm-hmm. eating birdseed. Okay. Now we move on to the final variable that's going to make Perek Shlishi so exciting. Ein mevi'in torin keneged b'nei Yonah. One is not allowed to bring a tor opposite a ben Yonah. What exactly are torin and b'nei Yonah?
Turtle doves.
Turtle doves and pigeons, we usually
pigeons.
Say, no?
Right, yeah. Yonah's a pigeon.
Honestly, I'll tell you a pet peeve of mine. Not that I'm so smart to have such pet peeves, but I find that when people translate words in Hebrew into English words that they equally don't understand, not much has been gained.
Right.
So pigeon, I know what a pigeon is, so that's valuable. What a turtle dove is, I could not identify a turtle dove today if you told me what a turtle dove was and what color it was. I would imagine it looks like, I would imagine, yeah.
Pigeon isn't.
Yeah. So, anyways, but especially when it comes yeah. to the Ketores, and they tell you, oh, do you know what this is? It's some obscure English word that I've never heard of before. Not very helpful. So, anyways, these are two types of birds that were commonly used. I can't tell you what they look like. I can tell you what a pigeon looks like a little bit, but a turtle dove apparently is white. Okay. So, now, the halacha is, Ein mevi'in torin keneged b'nei Yonah, velo b'nei Yonah keneged torin. Okay, the halacha is that you have to bring two of the same type. You can't bring one pigeon and one turtle dove. You can't bring one tor and one ben yonah. You have to bring two of the same type. Ketzad. And again, Mishnah illustrates. Haisha shehevia chatata tor ve'olata ben yonah. Let's say a woman came and she brought a chatas, which was a tor. And then she brought an ola, which was a ben yonah. What's the halacha in that case? Because she brought two different types. Tichpol ve'tavi olata tor. You have to change and bring a second ola of a tor. Okay? just guessing, by the way, I didn't see this in the Farshim, but why is that better? Why would you assume that we change for the Ola? Why do we change the Ola, not the Chatat? Why do we change? So again, the halacha was, if a woman brought one and one, we make her change the Ola to match the Chatas type of bird. Okay, that's the halacha which the Mishnah is saying.
What's it say in the Torah?
What?
What's it say in the Raita? What she has to bring? B'nai Torah. Doesn't it say
no,
that?
It says both.
It says both?
It says both. Oh. It says 100%. Okay? Let's see the opposite case. That'll help us find a clue as to what the motivating factor is. Ola ta tor. Let's say first, she brought an Ola, which is a Tor. And then Chatata ben Yona. And then she brought a Chatas, which is a ben Yona. Tichbo v'tavi Olata ben Yona. She's got to rebring her Ola again. Okay, so in both cases, you brought one and one. In both cases, you bring the Ola again. Okay? And you bring the Ola not from the type of bird that you brought the Ola originally, but from the type of bird which the Chatat was. All clear? So again, we are following the Chatat. The Chatat is the determinant as to which type of bird the woman must bring. And even if she brought the Ola of one type of bird, but then she brought a Chatat of another type of bird, she's got to go back and buy the same type of bird as the Chatat to bring another Ola. Okay? Any questions? So the determining factor is the Chatat. Ben Azai Omer, Ben Azai disagrees. Holkin achar harishon. No, it all depends on what you brought first. And whatever you brought first, okay, that is going to determine what the second one is. Not the Chatat versus Ola distinction that the Tanakhama made, but rather, whatever brought first, that you bring the second type.
Bird, yeah.
Yes, you bring the second bird in that manner as well.
Do you follow Ben Azai?
We do not. The halacha is like the Tanakhama.
Okay.
You can see Yavala in the Bar Tanur if you have, but you guys are all in Gemara.
So she only has to bring three of them, not four.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. At a maximum, she'd have to bring three. Well,
she's
not true.
Half
if she,
right.
If she got it wrong after this, meaning if, let's say, according to Tanakhama, she brought the Chatat to match the Ola, then she'd still have to bring another Ola to match her original Chatat. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would fix it. That's a good question. It sounds like it wouldn't fix it, but then she's brought a Chatas. I don't know. That's a good question. My assumption is that Chazal don't want you to do that because they would rather... So let me go back for a minute.
Yeah.
Tanakhama was of the opinion that it follows the Chatat. My assumption is because it's a lot easier to bring an Ola from a halachic perspective than it is to bring a Chatat. Olas you can donate all the time. So my presumption was the preference for bringing a second Ola is because we'd rather you bring another Ola than bring another Chatat. Make sense? That's what I assume the motivation for Tanakhama was.
The counter-argument is the Chatas in this particular case is more important than the Ola because it's a sin offering. And whatever that was done was a sinful act, quote around the word sin.
Right.
That
right.
would have the priority. That would be the counter-argument.
Well, Benazir just says it goes after whatever is brought first.
Yeah.
I think that's an easier logic to follow.
It is.
Right? It's easier logic to follow, say, the one that was brought first, that sets the rule for which type of bird it is.
Yeah.
But I think the Chachamim are just saying, listen, we'd rather you bring an Ola. I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what Tanakhama is saying. In which case, if you went ahead, but this is a good question, I didn't see it addressed in the Mefarshim, if you went ahead and you actually accidentally, according to Chachamim, brought a Chatas of the Ola type, it's hard to say that you wouldn't fulfill the halacha. Anyways, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Last case of the second perek. Again, we've gone through a number of new concepts here. We've had the kan meforeshes. We've had the now of the Torah and the Bnei Yonah. Last case. Ha'isha shehivia chatata. A woman who brought a chatat, vameta. And then she, unfortunately, did not live to bring her ola. Yaviu hayorshin olata. Her descendants have to bring the ola on her behalf. Okay, that's the halacha, still owed by the descendants. Olata vameta. However, if she brought her ola first and then she died, and again, this is further evidence that it was not a set order of ola then chatat, as we discussed off the shir. But we see in the Torah many places where it says to bring the chatat first, some places where it says to bring the ola first, what's an exception, what's not an exception, what's exactly going on. The bottom line is, we see different cases, different things were brought first. If she brought her ola first and then she died, do the descendants bring a chatat? No, because it falls into the category of chatat shemetu be'aleha. The halacha is that a chatat, if the person who was supposed to bring the chatat died, you just let that animal, again, live out its life.
So
Is that the case for animals as well, for
survival? I believe so.
Yeah, and that denies the argument that I made earlier. This offsets the argument that I
made
earlier.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Okay. By the way, the Bartanura notes, Afal gav de b'chol makom chatat kodemet le'ola, hinu davka le'mitzvah v'lo'ola. Okay, again, you can bring it in different orders, similar observation. Okay, now we get to the third parak, which is widely believed to be brutally impossible. What I have here are my notes from last time I learned it. I just made English notes, you can see, in point form. I will note that for some of the Mishnayos, there are various different opinions. I do not plan on going through every opinion that I was able to find for these Mishnayos. I will go through one opinion that I think reads in well with the Mishnah. If after that torture you would like to learn more opinions, we can happily sit down and do so, but I doubt it. The parak starts off very simply, but by the time you get to the later Mishnayos...
Can I just ask Don really a question?
Sure.
You've been bringing a lot of opinions, which has been great. What are the opinions that we're seeing on the sides here in the commentaries.
So the commentaries generally in Masechet Kinim just explain what's going on.
Who's the source?
Oh, so in the Gemara, there are various commentaries that are in the Gemara. Let me just—I can tell you about them. So you have over here.
Who they are.
Yeah. So you have the Ravid, okay, on the side. That's the small letters. Okay. You have the Rush on one side. On the bottom, down at the bottom, and you have the Raza in the other. Small writing.
I see.
Okay.
The Rush on the right.
I would note just some history here. The Raza is known as the Baal HaMa'or.
Yeah.
Wrote a commentary on the Rif. So basically, I get a lot of questions as a Gemara teacher. Yeah. Why couldn't we just cut out all the back and forth in the Gemara and set the final conclusions? So I say, guys, you know what? It's a great question. There's someone actually who sat and made that safer. His name was Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. And he wrote the Rif. So he summarized what he felt were the critical points for conclusion found in the Gemara, critical halachos, and it's published in the back of every Gemara. Now, this was considered an undisputed, amazing work of Torah scholarship and was widely, widely accepted, particularly in the Sephardic world. This was written about 1,000 years ago, a little bit less maybe, and you didn't touch this. The Rif was king. What happened is, about 100 odd years after the Rif was written, there was a young man, I believe history says that he was 18 years old, and he publishes a sefer called HaMa'or HaKatan, HaMa'or HaGadol, why he's known as the Baal HaMa'or. His name is Rabbi Zerachya Levi, young guy, and basically challenges the Rif on any huge number of points. Okay, for reference, this would be like, some... 20-year-old Schnook writing a sefer about why all of Rosh Hashanah's psakim are incorrect or something like that. Mm-hmm. People did not take kindly to this. So in particular, it aroused opposition from two major Rishonim. One was the Ramban. The Ramban wrote a sefer called Milchamot Hashem, which was the wars to defend the Rif from the Baal HaMa'or's questions. And the less known is the Ravid. The Ravid wrote a very, very, very strong critique in which he did not withhold insults from the Baal HaMa'or. So pretty much everywhere the Baal HaMa'or writes, the Ravid writes something mean in response. Now, we don't have all of them. We've recently discovered some of the Ravid's manuscripts where, again, he's very, very insulting, and he felt that this was standing up for the covenant of Torah. No one messed with the Rif, and the Baal HaMa'or did. Ultimately, history tells us that there are many things where we appreciate the Baal HaMa'or, and even the Ramban acknowledges, not so much again the Rav, but even the Ramban acknowledges when he argues with him that, like, you're dealing with someone here. You don't have the two Gedolei Hador write a response to your sefer if it's full of garbage. Mm-hmm. So that's the background between the Ravid and the and the Raza. You have over here also, okay, if you look, there's one, okay, the if you look at the very first page, it says, Masechet Kinim im Pirush v'Tosfot. There's an anonymous Rashi-like commentary, and there's a commentary that's attributed to Tosfot. What exactly those means, who exactly wrote those, I don't remember offhand. I don't even know if we know who wrote them, but they are meant to be a Rashi and Tosfot analog, okay? They are not... it's not actually written by Rashi. However, in the third parak, as we'll see, a few of these Mishnayos, thank God, are quoted in Zvachim. And because of that, we have Rashi on them. So that will tremendously, tremendously help us out.
Sheet in the also.
The okay. Article. Yeah, I don't have the.
Yeah. So who wrote that?
So Shita Mekubetzet, so Shita Mekubetzet was written about 500 years ago by a guy named Rav Bezalel Ashkenazi. I believe he was Egyptian, which was meant to bring in, at that point, a variety of different opinions from amongst the Rishonim. However, there have been other works which have been called by that name, which are not always from the same author, so just to be aware. I don't know the sort of the basis for this particular Shita Mekubetzet on Kinin. If it was written by Rav Bezalel Ashkenazi, great. If not, also great. I'm sure it's a wonderful work. Anyways, and these commentaries, listen, ultimately in Kinin, they're trying to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
There's not usually bringing in so many other opinions. For example, in a Gemara, if you look at Rishonim, they might bring you a Yerushalmi, and they might ask a strong question and ask a kasha from another Gemara. Here, that's not happening as much. What are you asking? A contradiction between Kinim and another Masechta from? It's very internal. It's very what the heck is happening? That's really the focus of the Mefarshim, like the focus is for us. So, Perek Gimel, chapter 3, begins with something that we hadn't really talked about until now. Not something new per se, but says the Mishnah. Bamed Varim Amorim, the entire Masechet so far has been dealing with what? B'kohen nimlach, when the Kohen asks us what to do. When the Kohen learned Masechet Kinim before he went to do his service.
He's the decider.
Okay, and therefore the Kohen comes to the Sanhedrin, to the Bezdin, to his older brother, I don't know, who learned Kinim, and says, hey, what do I do? These bridges got mixed up. However, aval b'kohen she'eino nimlach, but what if the Kohen didn't do that? And the Kohen's like, oh, no big deal, your chatas got mixed up with your ola? Eh. So here's the first case that the Mishnah is going to deal with. If the Kohen didn't ask and just did something, and it's going to say, what did the Kohen do and how many are kosher? So if you had achat lazo, achat lazo, shtaim lazo, shtaim lazo, shalosh lazo, shalosh lazo, if you had a case where two women came in and each had an equal number of kinim, okay, whether it was 1 and 1 or 2 and 2 or 3 and 3, whatever the case was, so now what did the Kohen actually do? Okay, so if asakulan lemala, if he did them all above, like an olas ha'of, then what's the halacha? Mechetzah kasher. All of the olos would be kasher, and he did multiple averas in bringing all the chataos there. Okay, so that's case number one, is again, if you had 1 and 1, or 2 and 2, or 3 and 3, and the Kohen decided to do all of them like an ola, then all of the olos are kasher, all of the chataos are pasul. Vice versa. Okay, so again, that was mechetza kasher or mechetza pasul. The olos would be good.
Because he's mixing up the sacrifices.
Correct. But bottom line is, ultimately, he did do all the olos correctly. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you had the reverse case, kulan lamata, he did all of them like chataos, mechetza kasher or mechetza pasul. Then all the chataos are good and all the olos have to be rebrought. However, if he did chetziyam limala vechetziyam limata, let's say he did half of them above and half of them below, which to me would be the most logical. If I was a Kohen and I didn't know the halacha, I would say, okay, I'll do half above and half below, right? So that actually changes the halacha slightly differently. Doesn't really end up changing the halacha much. Et shelemala, those which were above, mechetza kasher u mechetza pasul. Half are kosher and half are pasul. Ve shelemata, mechetza kasher u mechetza pasul. And those below, half are kosher and half are pasul. Why is this the case? Okay? The reason is because we always assume worst-case scenario. What would be the worst-case scenario if we have these kinim which are satum? They haven't yet been selected. Okay, so automatically, the first one that's done, let's assume they had one each. Okay, one just for the sake of simplicity, but we can do with 3 or 4 or 7 or whatever. Okay, they each have one pair of birds. Okay, so he does 2 above and 2 below. Bird number 1, whether it's from Hurkan or whether it's from Hurkan, it's going to be kosher, wherever you do it, right? Because it's the first bird. The second bird, what is the worst case scenario, if let's say we're doing another one above? Is that it was from the same woman, and it was supposed to be a chatat. Correct? Okay, that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario would be if it was from the second woman, and it was an ola then, right? But that didn't happen. We assume the worst. So the first one is good. The second one, we assume, is from the same woman, and therefore of the opposite type. Okay, same thing with the chataot. Of the ones that remain, guaranteed, one of them is able to be a chatat. The worst case scenario would be, again, where one woman's were entirely above and the other woman's were entirely below, then they'd each get credit for one.
So if all four of them were undesignated,
yes.
Did they become designated by where you...
Do the first one, always, yes. Okay. Yes, if the first one is brought as an ola, then the other one is automatically a chatat. And therefore, if you brought that second one as an ola, it would be pasul.
So I have a question as to why they refer to them above and below. Are they talking about the when they do the...
Yeah, it refers back to the first Mishnah of the Masechta,
yeah.
Where it tells us this is how you do a chata sa'of, this is how you do an ola sa'of, above the chuta sikra, below the chuta sikra.
Okay.
I remember it because ola is high.
That's yeah,
yeah.
The old
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's that whole problem of what goes on top and what goes on
yeah.
The bottom. Yeah. Okay.
Okay? So this is the first right. Mishnah. And by the way, if you do a 3 and 3, again, ultimately the worst case scenario will be where all of one woman's goes in the same location. That's the most possible it can be, which basically means half are kosher, half are possible. Now, let's say it's not such a beautiful, wonderful scenario like we have, and it's achat lazo, ushtaim lazo, or ushalosh lazo, or ueser lazo, or umeel lazo. Okay, so let's say you had one from one woman, which got mixed up with, let's say, five from another woman, meaning it's no longer equal proportions. When it's equal proportions, we know half are kosher, half are pasul. Depending on where they were, we can tell you which half were kosher and which half were pasul. Right? Again, if only olas were done, then we know all the olas are kosher. If only chatases were done, we know all the chatases are kosher. If you did half and half, we can tell you that half are kosher. Fine. That's good. Let's say now, again, you mixed up in this Mishnah, one with many. That's the case of the Mishnah. Okay, asakulan lamala, again, we got the obvious cases first. If the Kohen didn't follow the rules and did everything above, then you know all the olos are kasher. Mechatzah kasher or mechatzah pasul. Kulan lamata, again, if he did them all below, mechatzah kasher or mechatzah pasul. Okay, now we get to the complicated case, and I think you'll see this reflected in the Mefarshim. Chetzian limala v'chetzian limata. If you did half of them above and half of them below, hamirubeh kasher.
Majority.
Not the majority, but the number which was greater, meaning you had the one opposite the many, or you had two opposite many more, whichever number of original kinyan was larger, that is how many were performed correctly. And this is going to require us to do some math over here. Let's start again with a simple case of one mixed up with two. Okay, just so we can illustrate, but again, the halacha is going to be correct for all numbers, as we're going to explain. Okay, so you got one and two. Bird number one, let's say I'm doing my olas first, I'm going to do three olas, correct? Three olas and three chatases, that's the way I, the Kohen, have decided to bring them against halacha. Okay, so ola number one, guaranteed good, correct? Okay, ola number two, what's our concern?
Maybe a chatat.
Maybe it's the paired chatat from that woman. Okay, so assume that number two is pasul. Number three... Then, if number two was the paired chatat, number three must be a kosher ola. So I have two of my three olas have been correct. Okay, two of my three olas have been correct.
Why do you think number two is a kosher ola? Just because the
because all of the ones that have been designated chatat have already been used pasali. Meaning for each ola, let's think of it like this. For each ola that gets brought, it can give us a maximum of one certain chatat in the group.
Right.
So... Worst case scenario would be ola, chatat, ola. Best case scenario would be ola, ola, ola. But again, we're assuming the worst case scenario. So we assume that the second bird was in fact the pair of the first bird that had to be a chatat. Therefore, only one is no good on the top. One is not good on the top. That means we still have two chataot and one ola remaining on the bottom. So two chataot would be good. So two olot would be good. Two chataot would be good. And that's what we get. Hamaruba kasher. The point is... Okay, and again, I can start with X's and Y's if you'd prefer, or we can sit down afterwards and pen and paper, but the bottom line is, whenever you have a lesser amount, that is actually the amount that you're going to be subtracting from the ones that are kosher on top. Right? Because as far as the person, let's say it's 1 in 100, right? The maximum number that can be incorrect when you do them on top is 1.
1, sure.
Why? Because that's the only one that has a guaranteed pair. For the person who has 100... I can bring 100 straight of one type and it will always be kosher because they've not been designated yet as a chatat or ola.
No, if they have 100...
You've got 100 kinim.
50 of them...
100 kinim, I'm saying. 100 kinim. Not 50 kinim. 100 pairs of birds.
Right. 100 pairs.
100 pairs of birds. So 200 total birds.
So after 100, when you get to 101,
yes,
then maybe at that point they're all
correct.
They're all pasul.
Correct. Right? Which is, but since you're only bringing 101 on top to begin with, right? Because you've got 100 over here and 1 over here, the maximum that can be incorrect is 1.
Lesser number.
Right. So whichever is the larger contributor of kinim here, that number of chataot and that number of olot will be. Now, we don't know theoretically which persons was discharged, like earlier in the Masechta. It could be that one of the ones that was brought, in fact, in all likelihood, let's say again, we've got a case of 1 and 100. It could be that the one, now its pair was brought, the chatat pair, and that was the one invalid one, and all of the 99 other good ones were from this person, or it could be theoretically that all 100 of this persons were brought, and number 101 was chatas number 1 from this group of 100. It doesn't really matter, though. The bottom line is, you will always be able to have the maximum, the larger of the two numbers will have been kosher. Even though, again, we don't know theoretically who they came from, but we know that at the worst case scenario, the larger number will be kosher. Okay. Zeh HaKlal, says the Mishnah, here's the rule. Kol makom she'ata yachol lachlok et hakinin, any place that you are able to divide the kinin, v'lo yihu mishel isha achat, and they will not be one woman's, bein milamalan, bein milamatan. So any time that, again, you're able to set it up that one woman's will be above and below, meaning the way that you set it up to find the worst-case scenario is, mechatzak asher, mechatzak psul, how do you find the scenario? Split up the kinim so that all of one woman's will be either above or below. That will give you the worst-case scenario. Okay, that's ultimately what the Mishnah is saying is, set it up that one woman's should not be both above and below, because that would be the best-case scenario. Set it up that one woman should be entirely above or entirely below. That will give you the worst-case scenario. The Mishnah is describing to you how to find the worst-case scenario. Okay, the worst-case scenario always is one woman's kinim all in one location. Okay, so that's the Mishnah's rule. Okay. However, on the flip side, okay, if it was that case, mechetza kasher or mechetza pasul, okay, but if you cannot split them equally, okay, then hamarube kasher, the maximum amount is going to be kasher. But again, any time that you can split them equally, it's going to be half-half, like we saw in the first Mishnah, whereas if you have a situation where they, again, you're putting all of one woman's, which is the smaller number, on top, or even the larger number on top, the maximum is going to be kosher. That's basically the Mishnah's rule, just illustrating what we have in the previous Mishnayos. I should note, just because the Mishnah doesn't say this, again, if the coin was silly enough to do them all above or all below, meaning all of the birds all together, then obviously half are kosher, and the olas are all kosher, or the chataot are all kosher. Okay? So again, if you did all of them in one manner, then all of the olas are kosher. If you did it in all in a chatas manner, all of the chatas are kosher. Doesn't matter how many birds came from where. Again, so long as you did them all in one way, guaranteed the ones that were designated in that manner have to be kosher. Okay, so again, summarizing the rules. I know this is really tough, and we'll stop after the summary. Mm-hmm. I see kind of the glazed looks that are floating around.
It's counterintuitive, because you think on probability, it's better to do everything up top.
Right, first.
At least you know you're going to get it half right.
But in fact, you're going to get at least half right the other way as well. Yeah. That's the good part when you think about it. But let's set up the rules that we covered in the third parak. Okay, so if the coin doesn't ask, if he does them all above, all the olos are kosher no matter what happened. If he does them all below, all the chataos are kosher no matter what happened. If he does them half and half, if the women were equally half and half, then half will be kosher of each of the olos and half of the chataos will be kosher. If one woman brought more than the other woman, the larger of the two numbers will be kosher if it was, again, done half on top, half on bottom. That's really what these two Mishnayos in the third parak have said. We also, at the end, the Stuman and the Mifureshes, again, when you've got ones that you can't tell that you know are of certain types mixed up, they've got to die. However, if plain ones flew to the sides, that was that other halacha that we had, then you can just say the one that flew here is a chatas, the one that flew there is an ola, and everyone was happy. Let's let our brains relax a little bit, and We'll continue with the rest of the perplexing paragimel tomorrow. Okay.
Mishnah Gimel.
Right. Go ahead. Thank you.
Sure. Good.
Thanks.
Rabbi.
Take care.
Yeah, it's not easy. I don't. Yeah.
No, it's hard because it's not concepts that we're used to understanding.
Yeah.
It's good mental exercise.
Yeah. Okay.